This is Judge Michael Gibbons from Carson City. We have Judge Jerry Tao and Judge Bonnie Bulla in Las Vegas. We're on the Blue Jeans video, and we're ready to take the next case, which is number 78392 COA, Antonio Rojas versus Ana Maria Bolanos Alvarado. That's the time set for oral argument. And I can see on the video, we have appellant's counsel through the pro bono program, and that's Mr. Saldana Hot.
That's correct, Your Honor. All right.
I pronounce your name correctly?
Almost. It was Mr. Saldana.
Okay, that's silent H.
That's right, but I'm not picky. You can pretty much call me whatever you'd like.
Okay, well, silent H makes it much easier. And then Mr. Rhodes?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Okay. I thought you were going to be appearing by phone, but I now see you on video.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out. Apparently something was disabled on my laptop, so we got that ready. And in my conference room, for the justices to be aware of, I have my client, the mom, present in my conference room with me.
Okay. All right. You will continue on by video then. And can we hear from Las Vegas? Make sure everybody's communicating.
Yes. So, Your Honor, this is Ryan Saldana on behalf of the appellants, and Christian Castle is also here. He's also counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor.
All right. We'll have a welcome also to co-counsel. I saw your name on the brief. All right. And Judge Tao, you want to say something?
Good morning, everybody. We appreciate your accommodating us by, you know, arguing by video. This is the new world we're in now, and who knows how long it's going to last. But I do want to thank Mr. Saldana for taking this case through the pro bono program. We, as you guys know, there are more people in need of lawyers than there are lawyers willing to step up, and really appreciate the sacrifice of anybody who's willing to help out.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's our pleasure. It's been very helpful.
All right. Judge Bulla, would you like to say anything?
Good morning to everyone. We really appreciate you joining us this morning. I understand that it may be a little difficult because Judge Tao and I are both in our masks, but we will do our best to speak clearly, and I will do my best to try not to speak over both of you. But please let us know if there's any difficulty that you have on your end, and we'll do our best to assist. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we've done a number of these arguments by video, and for the most part, it's worked fine, but occasionally we've run into a problem, and when we did, we continued on with the argument either by telephone or by changing our locations to a different system to capture everything by video. So one way or another, we will continue on today no matter what happens. So don't leave if there's a technical problem. All right, Mr. Saldana, you are the appellant's counsel. You have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. We'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal.
Okay. All right, 1 minute. So you'll get the warning, a buzz sound at when there's 1 minute left. I assume you can see the clock anyway?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, you may proceed.
Morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Ryan Saldana, and I, along with co-counsel Christian Castle, are pro bono counsel for the appellant in this matter. Dad, appellant Antonio Xavier Rojas. We reserve a minute for rebuttal, so we'll get right into this. There are two questions before the court today. First question is whether a temporary custody order can be considered the most recent custody order. And the second question is whether the district court's failure to properly evaluate the best interest of the child factors warrants reversal. The answer to both those questions, Your Honors, is yes. And because of that, the district court abuses discretion in at least two ways. The district court first abuses discretion by considering Mr. Rojas's outdated drug history, which predated the most recent custody order. And the district court abused its discretion in a second way when it failed to appreciate nearly all meaningful evidence that benefited Mr. Rojas when evaluating the best interests of the child factors. Perhaps most shockingly, The district court merely shrugged off the fact that Ms. Bolanos Alvarado had just been released from federal prison for smuggling 80 to 90 pounds of heroin and cocaine across the U.S.-Mexico border. At this time, with your Honor's permission, I'll be addressing the very first issue regarding the substantial change in circumstances in Mr. Rojas' prior drug history, and co-counsel Christian Castle will briefly address the best interest of the child factors. Ultimately, it's our request that this court reverse and remand the district court's decision with an instruction to properly evaluate the evidence before it. Regarding the very first issue, Your Honors, whether the district court was correct in evaluating Mr. Rojas' drug history, which predated the most recent custody order, it is our opinion that they did not, and we have three points on this matter. First, Mr. Rojas did not waive his right to object to the admissibility and use of the district court's of the evidence here. Second, the temporary custody order is the most recent custody order, and any evidence that predated that regarding Mr. Rojas's drug history should not have been admitted.
So, Mr. Sena, let me ask you about the interesting legal question in this case. So, in this case, there's an initial decree way back when, and then you have these two. Then a whole bunch of stuff happens, as you guys know. There's a fair amount of chaos in this case. You have a couple of temporary orders. There's a guardianship. And some of these temporary orders end up remaining in place for a pretty unusually long period of time because of all this stuff that's going on. So when the last motion to modify comes in, what's the baseline for the Ellis standard, substantial change of circumstance? Is it the last temporary order? Is it the prior temporary order? Or do you go all the way back in time to the only permanent decree in this case?
Your Honor, is the appellant's position here that it is the temporary order, the May 2018 temporary order, that is the original baseline that cuts off all evidence before that. By evaluating any evidence before that temporary order, that had already been litigated. And so to reevaluate those issues again, the district court abuses discretion because Mr. Rojas's drug history had already been considered at the time of the temporary order. In fact, the only reason the temporary order was granted was because Mr. Rojas had completed his drug rehabilitation program and exhibited to the court that he was now drug free and clean. And so it is our position that it is the temporary custody order from May 2018 that is the starting point to evaluate the evidence from.
Do you have any authority for that, Mr. Saldana? The McMonigle case, Judge Tao's question dealt with when do you apply the Ellis standard, the two-part test. And this is actually two different issues, the Ellis and then the actual evidence under Castle. So the McMonigle case talks about the evidence. It says the evidence from the last order. It doesn't say temporary order. I'm unaware of any cases that say temporary order. There are some unpublished cases that say it's the original order. So how do you come to the conclusion that it's the temporary order that's controlling as to the first part of Ellis, substantial change in circumstances?
Your Honor, for that question, we turn to the actual language of McMonigle. And in that decision, the Supreme Court states, and I quote, the moving party in a custody proceeding must show that circumstances, have substantially changed since the most recent custody order. Events that took place prior to that proceeding are inadmissible. There is no distinction made there between whether that most recent custody order needs to be temporary or permanent. And here, the most recent custody order was the temporary custody order from May 2018.
All right. Well, let me ask you the second part then. Again, the court in McMonigle didn't actually say temporary, permanent. It didn't use those words. So you're reading into it, any custody order will count. And, you know, you can probably imagine some problems because family courts enter temporary custody orders all the time. So what you have in this case is a temporary custody order that was entered without an evidentiary hearing, without any best interest findings, without any look at relocation factors on moving to California, and without the opposing party not even being present, while a guardianship was actually controlling this case. So, I mean, this is a very unusual situation. Are you actually saying the temporary order should control in this case for both Ellis, substantial change of circumstances, and for Castle as to what evidence could apply when there was no evidentiary hearing?
Your Honor, if I'm understanding your question correctly, our position is that the temporary custody order here operated almost like a permanent custody order, because if we turn to the record, and I believe it's the record around page 390, it shows that The district court effectively said that Mr. Rojas now can take the children. There was no mention in there of it being temporary. Only later on, when in the court's minutes, does it mention that custody order was temporary. Right? So there was not a finite amount of time placed on that custody order. So this custody order effectively operated as if it was a permanent custody order.
Even though there were no best interest findings or relocation findings, and you're saying that's a final order?
Your Honor, that was a custody order that, for the purposes of this question, which is whether Mr. Rojas's prior drug history can be considered, that custody order is what sets that date, that temporary custody order from May 2018. Because at that time, the court made specific findings regarding Mr. Rojas's drug history. So to reevaluate that and then come in February 2019 to rule that there was a substantial change in circumstances because, I quote, dad had serious drug issues, that is an outdated
issue.
All
right, let me ask you about the drug situation. So a person's addicted to methamphetamine, goes to a treatment program, finishes the program, so he's no longer addicted to methamphetamine, and you can never look at the history to see if there's a threat to the child?
In terms of best interests of the child factors, Your Honor, absolutely. The court perhaps could look at what Mr. Rojas' history was and whether that would be in the best interest of the child to place the children with him. However, for the substantial change in circumstances factor, the court would not be able to look prior to the most recent custody order. And here, most recent custody order clearly accounted for the drug issues.
Doesn't that presuppose the court heard the evidence about drug use, had an evidentiary hearing, and made factual determinations other than having Mr. Rojas submit a document that says I completed the program and that's the only thing that's in front of the judge?
Your Honor, I apologize. May you repeat that question?
What I'm getting to is that there was no evidentiary hearing where the court actually decided these issues about the drug use, and therefore you're claiming that the judge in the future couldn't look at it, even though there was no objection, but you're claiming he can't look at it when they had the real evidentiary hearing in the following January or February. So, and what I'm suggesting is you have to actually have an evidentiary hearing in the first instance for the rule to come into effect that facts are determined, therefore you're not going to relitigate these facts. But if you never had the hearing to determine the facts, how can you apply the rule that says when you actually do have the hearing, you can't look at the facts?
Sure, and I understand your concern, Your Honor, but just based on the clear language in McMonagle, it says the most recent custody order, not the most recent evidentiary. And because of that, at that point, the McMonagle case could have specified that if it wasn't actually addressed in an evidentiary hearing, that issues that predated that most recent custody order then could be considered. That's not what McMonagle said. It just says that the moving party must show that circumstances have substantially changed since the most recent custody order. There's no accounting there for
what about the lack of objection? So, I mean, you go to the hearing, the actual evidentiary hearing later, and Mr. Ross doesn't object. So now we're going to say the court should be reversed when he never even objected to it?
Your Honor, it is not necessarily the admissibility of that evidence that Mr. Rojas would have objected to, because that evidence perhaps could have come in for the best interest of the child factors. And courts hear, district courts hear evidence all the time. And it is perhaps, you know, it's not a substantial error for them to consider that, admit that evidence. But what is reversible error is when the district court uses that evidence to reach a decision. Because that's exactly what the district court did here. They used evidence that should not have been considered for the substantial change in circumstances, and they used that evidence to rule that there was a substantial change, when that evidence never should have come in the first place for that factor.
You've done an excellent job, Mr. Saldana, navigating the nuances of this situation, because there are several that apply, and I really like the way you did that. All right, are you going have some time for Mr. Cascola to talk about best interests?
Yes, Your Honor, you'll address that right now. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Cascola, we already bleeded over into the best interest a little bit. Mr. Saldana set it up for the background about the distinction here, but you can proceed.
Thank you very much, Your Honor, and thank you, Ryan. And turning to the best interest of the child factors, These factors have been addressed in detail by both sides in the briefing, and I'd just like to focus the court's attention to some of the fundamental issues at play here. And we recognize that a district court, of course, has very wide discretion when it comes to evaluating the best interests of the child factors. And ordinarily, when an appellate comes to court and disputes a custody determination, they're going to argue that the district court's opinion was short-sighted or foolish or erroneous, and the respondent will, of course, claim that, no, this judge was wise and magnanimous and made a very well-considered ruling based on the evidence. But as it relates to the appellate court's perspective here, to be able to adequately weigh the arguments made by either side, be it myself, Ryan, or Mr. Rhodes, the court has to turn to the district court's findings, district court's order. And that's why Nevada law requires that district courts set forth specific factual findings that tie to the best interest factors and give an adequate explanation as to the basis for its custody determination. And they have to do so because these specific findings and explanations are essential and crucial for courts to be able to deal with requests to enforce or modify custody orders, and naturally, as we have here for appellate review purposes. Rivero v. Rivero requires that, Lewis v. Lewis requires that, and Arcella v. Arcella requires that. The failure to set forth specific findings and give explanations as to each of the NRS factors constitutes abuse of discretion under Nevada law. And looking at the court's order here and the court's findings here, we can see that the court did at least list each one of the best interest factors. But the specific factual findings and the adequate explanation, that's what's missing. At a minimum, anyone who looks at the district court's order is going to be left having to speculate as to what it actually believed was in the best interest of the child and why it was in the best interest of the child. As many of my old math teachers always like to say, you have to show your work, right? That's what's missing in this case. And I'm sure Mr. Rhodes can and has offered arguments as to why he believes the best interest factors favor the mother, her award of primary physical custody, but even he would have to speculate as to why the district court actually made that decision. The district court granted the mother primary physical custody, but did not explain why that was in the best interest of the children. And at the same time, the district court limited the physical custody rights of Mr. Rojas, but again, didn't explain why that benefited the children. And turning to the actual substance of this court order, what little there is, I would say, first of all, I think the findings as is, that's sufficient basis to reverse and remand alone. But looking at that substance, I think there's two prime examples of how the district court has made mistake here. First, they didn't consider all of the evidence necessary to evaluate each of the best interest factors. By example, under the nature of the relationship of the child with each parent factor, the court indicated, quote, mom gave specifics as to what she does with the children when they're with her, and the court did not get that from dad. And similarly, as to the cooperation between the parents factor, the court found that dad did not testify about his ability to cooperate. And the reason we highlight this language in particular is because there's no dispute here. The court said that Mr. Rojas did not offer this evidence, but looking at the report record, we can see that he did offer testimony. He gave precise details about his daily routine.
All right. And Mr. Casca, I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you want to save time for a rebuttal?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. I'll very briefly conclude. The second issue I just wanted to point out is that the court's discussion of the drug trafficking issue is just wholly inadequate. The mother moved, 80 to 90 pounds of drugs across an international border, and all the court had to say was, both parties have had drug issues. It's not a substantive discussion. It's not enough under any standard, and the court hasn't truly considered what was in the best interest of the children. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
All right. Since I spent a lot of time talking during Mr. Saldana's argument, we'll go ahead and give you the full minute in rebuttal that you asked for, Mr. Saldana.
Thank you so much.
Right. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
And Mr. Tasco, you were doing fine. You just got caught by the clock.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll proceed now to the respondent side of the case with Mr. Rhodes.
Mr. Rhodes, you need to unmute. Are you muted?
There we go. The trial court did not abuse its discretion, and it relied on substantial evidence before it. Under Sims, for this court to reverse the trial court, there must be a clear abuse of discretion. We don't have that clear abuse of discretion here. We talk about...
Well, so right off the bat here, you've got the one finding, the one best interest finding that even Anna, I'm not sure if you pronounce her first name, concedes was wrong when the district court stated that Antonio failed to testify about his relationship with the children, when in fact everybody kind of concedes that he did. So isn't that one erroneous finding right off the bat?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that that was harmless error because the court found that that factor did not favor either parent.
Well, the question is, if he had made the factor correctly, how much weight would he have given that factor in the grand scheme of things?
I believe it would have been the same, Your Honor. Mom and Dad both had testified to that. I believe it would still be not favoring either Mom nor Dad in that scenario. And the trial court had substantial evidence. Her testimony from Mom on the witness stand, Dad on the witness stand. We talk about this, the drug issue. There is 16 pages of cross-examination by Dad's trial attorney, Mr. Harris, on Mom on the witness stand for the drug issue. There was a half a dozen pages where I had brought it out on direct examination. What I believe that Dad is attempting to do is use Mom's drug conviction as a punishment and to take the children away from her as a punishment. And that's not proper. It's prohibited under Sims and Drager case that Sims relied on. We cannot use the change of custody as a punitive measure. And that's what Dad's asking for this court to do. At the end of the day, the controlling order in this court was the decree that was entered in 2017, hey, in May of 17.
Mr. Rhodes, before we get back into that, can we go to the point you just made? Is the appellant asking to use this conviction punitively? Now, I've been totally puzzled when reading this case to understand how somebody who's importing over 80 pounds of heroin and cocaine or methamphetamine, whatever it was, could be in prison for less than a year and then just come right out and ask for sole custody. I mean, that just seems baffling to me. If she had been convicted in Nevada state court, the minimum sentence would have been 10 to 25 years. So, I mean, there's something going on here that I'm not seeing about this drug situation. I mean, what's happening?
Your Honor, without bringing up anything, because I had objected to it and the court upheld my objection at the trial court level when Mr. Harris attempted to get into Anna and dealing with potential co-conspirators. I don't want to get into that, but I did note in my closing argument that basically a 12-month sentence is a minimal sentence in the scheme of things. There's no doubt about that. But here's the issue with the drug.
All right. I understand your drift of where you're going with this about not wanting to get into that in light of that lenient sentence. So how does this affect her ability to be a parent, though? I mean, is she able to step right back in as soon as she gets out of prison and go for sole custody, and that's perfectly legitimate?
The Honor, sole custody, I would submit, it was an error. That's what happens time when we have these pro se litigants that file their handwritten motions. It should have been back to what the joint physical custody was. But irrespective of that, yes, Mom is working. She has been working. She's passed every drug test. She hasn't had a dirty drug test since 2016. And yes, she can do what she needed to do. She testified of what she does with these children. People make mistakes. This is a big mistake. I'm not going to minimize it. But do we punish her and take the kids away from her for making that mistake, a one-time mistake? I would submit we don't, Your Honor, and I would submit that it would be improper. The trial court weighed this evidence. We had a lot of time at trial on this drug issue. And I believe if this court was hearing this for the first time, it may come up to a different decision. But the appellate court, as the court knows much better than I do, can't replace its what it would have done with what the trial court did. Did Judge Hoskin have a clear abuse of discretion? The answer is no. Both Anna and Dad were within 8 feet of the judge when they were on the witness stand. He weighed their credibility. He weighed their testimony. And he properly considered everything. Did something get overlooked? Yes, but it was harmless error. The second thing is, the court further reviewed it when Dad filed his motion for a stay. And the trial court issued this order denying the stay, and it further reaffirmed this decision. Again, it was not a court did not make an error. The court itself did not believe that this court would reverse it on appeal, and that's contained within its order denying the stay. We talk about temporary orders. I deal with family court a lot, and as the court is well aware of, there's temporary orders all over the place. There's no testimony. This case has not been litigated at the time that the temporary order was entered. There's been no direct testimony, no cross-examination. The evidence that the court may consider at a motion hearing is different than what may be considered at a trial. Furthermore, Dad's drug use, he tested dirty at the beginning of all of this when the guardianship was put into place. As the court properly said, neither party is wearing white hats. And this is the true province of a trial court, to weigh the evidence.
Mr. Rhodes, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but let me ask you this question just so I'm clear. Do you believe that the decree that we should be looking at is the divorce decree into determining whether or not the district court did not address the issues properly? And if we look at the divorce decree itself, it was joint physical custody, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that would mean that we would just really be focusing in on the best interest of the children into determining if there should be a modification of custody.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So you had concerns about your client perhaps being punished for making a mistake, but couldn't the same thing be said of Dad, Mr. Rojas? You know, he made a mistake. He went to rehabilitation. And as you indicated, the district court said, you know, nobody's perfect in this situation. But can you then summarize for me the key factors that the district court considered that would support your client receiving sole physical custody?
Your Honor, the court addressed that when it addressed that mom had been the primary caregiver prior to all of this happening. That she had taken Dad into her household when Dad was homeless, that she facilitated the visitation of Dad. She would actually allow Dad to stay at her place, and then she would leave and go elsewhere so that Dad would have time with the child or with the children. Absolutely, Your Honor. And Mom testified that she had an IEP with the older child here in the Clark County School District. And if the court has noted on the record, we had asked for joint physical custody. I believe that under Bluestein, we could have maintained a joint physical custody arrangement with the exchanges in Barstow. It'd be inconvenient, but it's not unheard of. And that's was what they were doing, albeit a little bit differently, because Mom actually had to drive to Riverside to Dad's house. He didn't even have to meet her halfway. We tried to meet Dad halfway on this, and he rejected our joint physical custody. Mom put it on the record on the witness stand. I believe
Mr. Rhodes, let's jump back to the other issue that Mr. Sedona spent a lot of time with Chief Judge Gibbons. What, in terms of the baseline for either the substantial change in circumstances or the kinds of evidence the court can consider now, whether the baseline is the original permanent decree a few years ago or whether it's the most recent temporary decree, let me throw you out a counterfactual. Let's say that a court enters a temporary decree, and for whatever, you know, series of facts, let's say that temporary decree ends up lasting for a really long time, let's say 5 years, okay? And during the 5 years, the kid's doing great. Kid's going to school, kid's getting straight A's, kid's president of the class, kid's in every, you know, he's getting varsity letters, he's, you know, he's just a superstar student, he's got no behavioral problems, things are going great. So under that set of facts, which I know is not the fifth set of facts here, but I'm talking about the legal boundaries of this argument, why shouldn't the current situation in place through the temporary decree, why shouldn't that be the baseline, Your Honor, for any subsequent motion?
Here's my take on that, and I would come as opposed 1 year, that's basically what this case was. The kids were with the grandmother for 10 months. They were with dad for 2 months, and then mom filed her motion in July of 2018. So it's a much rather shorter period of time. And then in the intervening time, these small children had interactions with mom, not as much as she would have.
No, I understand those are the facts of this case, and I understand my hypothetical are not the facts of this case. My question is, it seems like your argument is in the motion we have now, you should always run it off of the last permanent decree and not off of the temporary decree. And I'm asking you, aren't there factual situations where that doesn't make any sense?
Your Honor,
should the rule be that categorical is really what I'm asking.
It's categorical in this instance, but in the five-year instance, Your Honor, I believe that we could look at it under like doctrine of laches. And I would believe at that point in time, a credible argument could be made that that would have been the controlling order under laches.
Mr. Rhodes, something that you brought up in your brief, and then it was a new issue, and that was about a domestic violence conviction, and then the appellant in response said, no, we shouldn't even look at that. I didn't understand, though, where this fit in within this timeline. So if it was something that preceded the May 2017 decree, or it was after that?
It preceded the May 2017 decree, right. Your
so
Honor.
So would you agree then that under any interpretation of the rule, then that was something that wouldn't be considered unless you could show the district court never knew about it?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree.
Okay. All right, so can we just forget about that and we'll just stick with the best interest factors that were applied?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And since a few of these factors didn't apply at all, some of them were neutral, there only were a couple left at issue, does the mistake on the one somehow undermine the efficacy of the final decision that the court made?
No, Your Honor, because the court found that didn't favor either party. And I believe that the trial court properly considered everything, and for the longest time, we didn't even have findings of fact quite this detailed in the family court arena. And thanks to the Supreme Court and the appellate courts, we do now. And we do hold the judge's feet to the fire somewhat to at least explain their rationale.
Okay.
And I believe that Judge Hoskin properly explained his rationale and came to the correct decision.
Okay, so you've talked about the drug situation. Is that your response to the argument then that Mr. Kaskala was making that the judge didn't give it adequate consideration?
I believe the judge gave it adequate consideration. I believe the judge gave also dad's history with drugs adequate consideration of two.
Does it make any sense that the court couldn't look at the drug issue when it had its hearing in January, the evidentiary hearing in January of 2019? So in other words, it was looking at the drugs situation as applied to both parties.
The court did, Your Honor, and the court did hear testimony from both parties and the evidence.
Okay, so was it wrong for the court to consider Mr. Rojas's use of drugs prior to the temporary order, but after the decree of divorce?
No, Your Honor, because that, if we look at it under Rooney, that would have been an adequate cause for to a set an evidentiary hearing. And so both mom's imprisonment and dad's drug use both could have served as adequate cause for a evidentiary hearing. And I believe that's why we're in this situation, and the temporary order is what it is, a temporary order.
Did you participate in that hearing or any counsel for your client when the judge made the temporary order?
I did not, Your Honor. I was hired to do the trial in January of 16.
Okay. So this was May of 2018 when the court said that, all right, the guardianship's gone on long enough, mom's still in prison, dad finished his drug program, so he can go and go ahead and take the kids and move to California with them.
And mom was not present at that hearing because she was still in confinement. And so it basically was that the court, once the kids finished high school for May of that year, we were in California for 2 months when mom filed her motion. I believe the court adequately addressed that, Your Honor.
And during the time from then up until the hearing in January of 19, did mom have contact with the kids?
Yes, Your Honor. In the record, it will show that she had Thanksgiving that year. She had to do a couple drug tests to prove to Judge Hoskins that she was clean, and she passed both of those tests. And so she had, I believe it was every other weekend, she would drive to Riverside, get the kids to come back to Vegas. And also over Christmas of 2018, mom had the children as well.
And dad says during that time period, though, that he was an exemplary father, and the court really didn't give that much consideration.
I believe both parents are good parents, Your Honor. I will not take that away from dad, nor should dad take that away from mom.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Who's going to make the rebuttal argument here?
I will, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. We have Mr. Kaskla then.
Thank you very much. I have three quick on rebuttal here. And as Judge Tao pointed out, the court did not consider at least one piece of evidence in this case. And the bottom line is, given that the district courts are required to consider each of the best interest of the child factors, the outcome of not considering the evidence relevant to one of those factors is identical to not considering that factor at all. And I think that's particularly the case here, given, as has been pointed out by all of the parties, that margin seemed to be pretty slim. There was no white hats here. So it's possible that the court could have been persuaded by that one issue alone. And I'd also like to point out that there was a similar mistake made as to the cooperation issue. Second, I believe the drug issue was just not discussed in any substantive detail. I mean, this is like a wild, outrageous incident. I think it warrants some serious conversation. The mother was found with a huge quantity of drugs. How does that affect the kids? Does she have any relation to criminal links? What's the outcome? But that's not explained by the court, and that's why we're left here to argue. Because the district court didn't do its full job, and therefore the court abused its discretion by not setting forth those specific findings that is necessary for both appellate review and for me and Mr. Rhodes to argue about it.
All right, Mr. Kaskla, thank you very much. And again,
thank you, Your Honor. Thank you,
Mr. Saldana and Mr. Rhodes. I hope, Mr. Saldana and Mr. Kaskla, you'll consider more pro bono cases in the future. You both did a great job, and it's for clients that can't afford counsel at this stage. It's pretty daunting to deal with the appellate process, and getting pro bono counsel is a tremendous benefit, not only to them but to the court, to get much more effective arguments and fully understand the law. And Mr. Rhodes, you've been on this case for a lot longer. You stuck with it. You did a fine job, too. We appreciate your efforts also. And we'll take this matter under submission for a written decision in the near future. Judge Tao, would you like to make any concluding comments?
Yeah, just, again, thanks, Mr. Saldana, for taking this case pro bono. And thank you, Mr. Rhodes, for the excellent argument. Mr. Saldana, just a question that's not, won't bear on our decision. If this case goes on in district court, are you guys going to stay in the case, or are you just doing the appeal? I always wonder that because, you know, there's value obviously in having pro bono counsel on appeal, but then what happens if it goes back? You know, because that's really where, as you guys know, in many ways, that's more important than the appeal. But not that you're bound to, because I know that's not the terms of the pro bono program, but I'm just personally curious.
Your Honors, we've discussed with Mr. Rojas the potential of staying on for district court hearing if this does get remanded, just because at this point we are familiar with the case. In the event that it is not remanded, that's a bit of a different circumstance because the court would be evaluating a whole new set of facts, right? But if this is remanded, we would strongly consider staying on board and helping Mr. Rojas there.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that, and that speaks well of your firm. And again, it's not going to play any role in our decision. I'm always curious what happens after pro bono, you know, representation is done. But thank you for that.
Thank you both. Excellent argument. I'm smiling underneath my mask. I really appreciated just you all taking the time and helping us understand the issues on both sides. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be in recess, and we'll go into our caucus now.
Thank you. Everyone stay safe, and thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Good seeing you again, Mike.
All right, take care, guys. Bye-bye.